back with your daily comedy news. Jimmy Fallon tells us an FDA panel gave the green light to the Pfizer vaccine for kids between the ages of 5 and 11. That's right. Kids vaccines are the best way to prevent the two things parents fear the most, COVID and homeschooling. In a few weeks, you're going to see bouncers outside Chuck E. Cheese checking vaccine cards. Colbert said, hey, kids, guess who gets to go to the doctor twice in the space of 3 weeks? And don't worry, he will stab you, Fallon. Kids can get the shot as soon as this week. Great timing, right after they go door-to-door on Halloween, Kimmel. Now kids can forget about COVID and worrying about that and go to spreading every other disease known to man. Fallon, here's how the vaccine will work. Older kids can get Pfizer, younger kids can get Moderna, and the middle kid can get Johnson & Johnson. From Inside Hook in Malibu, comedians in cars getting coffee gets ugly. I've been sitting on this for a couple days, been so busy. A low-key outing started by Jerry Seinfeld and Spike Feresten has turned into a fight with the city. On any given weekday, Malibu Village looks like any other higher-end strip mall in the U.S. There's a Chipotle, a Lululemon, a Sephora, Malibu Kitchen, Broad Street Oyster Company. But on Sundays, it's a battleground between car guys and the city. The LA Times says what started years ago as a cars and coffee meetup between comedian Jerry Seinfeld and writer Spike Feresten spiraled out of control as pandemic-induced lockdowns made people seek open-air fun. Seinfeld told the LA Times, Spike Feresten and I invented driving to Malibu Kitchen in a cool car to get coffee 20 years ago. I'm not surprised this idea has taken over the entire city. Well, it's taken over the parking lot of Malibu Village, at least, says Inside Hook. What had started as a five-car meetup has now become 200 to 300 cars. The city has stepped in, barricading the lot in the morning, but now car enthusiasts are simply coming later in the day, filling up the spaces and hanging around for hours, reportedly leading to a significant decrease in business at the various stores and restaurants. City officials are blaming the high-profile car guys who show up, including Feresten, who is not high-profile, I'm sorry, Jay Leno, Smoking Tire podcast host Matt Farah, and others. In other words, Jay Leno. In response, the Porsche and Mercedes owners say, it's not an official event. Anyway, it wouldn't be such a big deal if you hadn't started blocking the parking lot in the morning. Despite the way I read that, that is not attributed to Jerry Seinfeld in any way, despite it being very similar the way I read it to my angry Jerry Seinfeld half-ass impression. Spike Feresten wrote in a recent Instagram post, there are a lot of theories and some rare photographic evidence of a mythical car show every Sunday at the Malibu Country Mart at 10 a.m. The locals told me it was a legend, a lie, but I didn't believe them. So I hid in the bushes in front of a Chipotle, hoping to catch a glimpse of this almost never before seen event. Well, bingo, I struck gold. I saw Jay Leno and his Maserati. Kumail Nanjiani, star of the upcoming film Eternals, and as you may have heard, he's pretty buff these days. He tweeted a response to a reported homophobic review bombing of his new movie. Screen Rant says Eternals has generated controversy from some comic book readers who are upset at how the film updated the race, gender, and sexuality of the Eternals from their comic book counterparts. As one example, Nanjiani's own character was originally portrayed as a Japanese samurai in the comics, but has been updated for the film to be a Bollywood movie star. The most controversial change, however, pertains to the inclusion of LGBTQIA+ characters in the form of character Fastos. Those agitated by the news of the MCU's first openly gay superhero have flooded Eternals' IMDb page with negative reviews, criticizing the film for its LGBTQIA+ representation. This got Kumail Nanjiani's attention. He said, looks like we're upsetting the right people. From the New York Times, Jason Zinnemann, who you should follow on Twitter, he does a lot of great stuff. He reviewed four recent comedy specials. You should read his piece in the Times really quickly. He said about Theo Von's special, a couple times a year, some city slicker with impeccable elite media credentials whispers to me, what do you think of Theo Von? What that translates is, I don't think I was going to like this guy, but he's hilarious. And it's true, one of the most magnetic storytellers in comedy today. He plays with hot button cultural issues, but not for cheap shock. I forgot to watch that over the weekend. Tonight? It could happen tonight. Roy Wood Jr., Jason Zinnemann says he's clear about outrages, but also admirably willing to explore nuance, even if it makes him look bad. This is the rare comedy that preaches forgiveness but understands revenge has its benefits. Ricky Velez, I did see that special. I lasted exactly 4 minutes and I bailed. But Jason Zinnemann, who's smarter than I am, said one of the funniest sets I ever saw was by Ricky Velez. And the strangest part was that he was an opening act. It was many years ago. I recall little outside of a strong belief that this live wire joke slinger would one day produce a dynamite comedy special. I wish I could say this debut was it. But instead, it's just a solid introduction to his spiky, propulsive comedy. And Joe Firestone's special. Jason writes, my favorite moment in this comic documentary about a group of senior citizens taking a comedy class, love that setup, is when we're dropped in the middle of a rambling digression from an older lady in a scarf saying she wished religion and gender were banned, then segues into the horror of the Holocaust and a story about coal mines before the camera shifts to Joe Firestone, who says, I think the question is comedy a gift? Fantastic. So follow Jason Zinnemann on Twitter. Some other sources you should follow. Vulture. I read Vulture every day. AV Club. I read AV Club every day. And you hear me credit them with a lot of the stories on this podcast. I'm also starting to think about my top 10 funniest things for 2021. And I'm not at all sure what's on it yet. And I don't have that many things on it. But I'm starting to think about it because it's November now. Holidays are coming. G.W. Hatchett reviewed Hasan Minhaj's new special. The Hatchett writes, in case you ever wanted to watch a Hasan Minhaj show in an auditorium at the Kennedy Center, you missed your chance. Oops. Thanks, G.W. Hatchett. The six-month-long comedy tour, The King's Jester, strayed far from the quality of his previous work, oh no. In both Patriot Act and Homecoming King, Minhaj thrived off using his personal experience to discuss larger issues facing the country. The quality of both those shows, though conceptually different, relied on a compelling thesis that grounded each joke in a message larger than the bit itself. But there was no such thesis in The King's Jester, which led to a muddled, self-centered show that relied more on Minhaj's newfound fame rather than an ability to say something true. The atmosphere in the Kennedy Center that night felt much more like a rally for a political candidate than a comedy show. Over the course of the two-ish hours of the show, which is long, Minhaj tried to tackle too many topics but didn't adequately develop any of his punchlines. Instead, his jokes came off as a shallow front to complain about personal issues and bloat his new fame. He has been everywhere like this last week. I don't know what's going on. His press people are definitely working it. Minhaj's comedic magic lies in his ability to tell a story that seems fabricated and bring it to life by illuminating a screen behind him that completely validates every aspect of the story. But his charm falters when the anecdotal stories he tells sounds like fabrications meant only for the purpose of empty laughs and ego boosts. For instance, he told several stories that tried to set himself as a hero dad by widening his eyes and saying lines like, "But I can't do that now. I'm a dad." And then pause for reactions. It lacked connection to his routine and seemed like an attempt to elicit some awes from the women in the room. For anyone expecting content on par with his usual substantive comedy, Minhaj's The King's Jester will likely disappoint. Yikes. You've heard me talk about recently, I'm aware the episodes are getting long. There's so much getting on. So I just want to tell you, in the first half of the podcast, I bumped not one, not two, not three, not four. I bumped five stories because of length. But we got to talk about Dave Chappelle yet again. And I'll tell you, behind the scenes, when I ran the reports over the weekend, the like top seven episodes had Dave Chappelle in the title. So this is clearly something that you guys like hearing me talk about. But on the other hand, I've been doing it in the second half of the podcast because I don't want it to become just the Dave Chappelle report. This from Jezebel, the headline, "The Cancellation Scam." Jezebel writes, artists like Dave Chappelle don't fear cancellation. They depend on it. What they really fear is irrelevance. Dave Chappelle is the last of a dying breed. He knows this, and he seems very preoccupied with the ever-approaching specter of change. His latest work has particularly obsessed over the past, even as he gestures towards reckoning with the present. Time out before I read further. So personally, I do think Dave has been overplaying the, "Oh, they're trying to cancel me." My sense of things is like five people wrote editorials, including this one. And for the most part, people were like, Chappelle's special was pretty good. Not as good as some previous ones. That's if I just threw everybody's opinion in a blender. That seems to be generally the opinion. I'm not sure that people are rioting in the streets over Dave Chappelle. As far as Dave getting irrelevant, can I remind you, 846 was just last summer. Nobody captured the moment like Dave Chappelle did, so he's not irrelevant. Again, he may have slumped with this recent special, and as a fan of comedy, I'd love to see him do something else and just stop talking about this. But to call Dave Chappelle irrelevant? No way he's irrelevant. Back to Jezebel. In the closer, Chappelle grumbles about how new gays are too sensitive. He misses old school gays. In a sense, he's saying that he misses the days when people knew how to take a joke. He misses the days when jokes made at the expense of LGBTQ people, like jokes made about any marginalized group, could exist without having to be unpacked, deconstructed, criticized, or canceled. Chappelle once said of his idol and influence Richard Pryor, What a precedent he sent, not just as a comic, but as a dude. The fact that someone was able to open themselves wide open like that, it's so hard to talk in front of people and open yourself up to your closest friends, but to open yourself up for everybody. I freebase, I beat my women, I shot my car, and nobody's mad at Richard at that. They understand. Somehow they just understand. And it's the example I would think to myself that gave me the courage to just get back out on stage. Jezebel writes, that's what makes Chappelle's latest work so fascinating to watch. He's trying to open himself up and perform a genuine panic that inclusivity will somehow lead to cancellation of people who don't perform perfect wokeness. Of course, he doesn't really fear cancellation. He relishes and welcomes it. What he really fears is irrelevance. This, I believe, says Jezebel, is the cancellation scam. Many artists these days create work or say things publicly that are specifically calibrated to create these kinds of reactions and debates. And for whatever reason, the LGBTQ community has become a focal point of this grift. The Closer has its place. It's a time capsule of the moral panic surrounding trans lives in the 2020s. I imagine that maybe 50 years from now, some kid will see a clip from The Closer and laugh. Of course, they won't be laughing with him. They'll be laughing at him and how ridiculous this all was. Spoilers for the finale of What We Do in the Shadows that aired last week. I'll give you 3 seconds here. This story from Newsweek. Matt Berry has starred in a number of fantastic comedy shows, including What We Do in the Shadows, which is fantastic. I've been catching up on season 3 this week, and I have been loving it. In the season finale titled The Portrait, Matt Berry's Laszlo goes into a room where he can play the piano as he struggles with his grief following, spoiler, the death of energy vampire Colin Robinson. While Laszlo's there, Guillermo goes to him to discuss his wife Nadja's desire to go to England to be part of the Supreme Vampiric Council. And it's in that scene that Matt Berry makes reference to his Channel 4 show, Toast of London. One of the songs Matt Berry played on the piano was the theme to Toast of London. Showrunner Paul Sims spoke to Newsweek about the Easter egg and saying it bordered on being too self-referential. It was so subtle they felt some viewers wouldn't notice, which made it perfect. In that moment, we just wanted him noodling on the piano, and then we heard him doing the Toast theme, and we thought, ah, that's really cool. It's almost on the edge of being a little too self-referential, but it was really cool, and people who know both shows, I think, will be really excited by it. And also, it was a piece of music we didn't have to pay a lot of money for because Matt gave us a good deal, win-win all around. By the way, huge news, and I didn't know this, Matt Berry has finished work on season 4 of Toast of London. It's called Toast of Tinseltown. I knew they were talking about making another season of Toast of London. I didn't know it was done. That's awesome. If you haven't watched Toast of London, give it a shot. From memory, I think it's on Netflix. I went through the whole thing. And if you don't fall in love with the character Clem Fandango, I can't help you. That is your comedy news for today. Would love to hear your thoughts on stuff. That's what the Facebook group is for. It is called Daily Comedy News Podcast. Post whatever you want, you know, within reason, no hate speech. Don't be an a-hole, you know, but, you know, comedy. Follow this show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. See you tomorrow.